What's up, party people? Welcome to episode 12 of the Believe in Mavs podcast. I'm your host, Ron Tarajan. And ladies and gentlemen, this is the season finale of season one of the Believe in Mavs podcast. The reason why it's a season finale is because the Mavs season has unfortunately come to a close. As we discussed last week, the Mavs have fallen at the hands once again of the Los Angeles Clippers, and once again in the first round of the postseason. And now, what's especially discouraging about that is that the way I typically view things is if you're not moving forward, you're moving backwards. And to see the Mavs not really take that leap forward like many were expecting, it's disheartening, to say the least. When you have a finite amount of time to make great use of Luka's youth and cheap contract, and you squander that opportunity, that's a shame for your organization. It says a lot about your inability to build around somebody who should be so easy to build around. The fact that you can't make the most of it and strike while the iron's hot, it really speaks to your ability or lack thereof as a front office. And look no further than somebody who has failed to rise to the occasion than one Kristaps Porzingis. Now, I'm going to borrow this tidbit of information from Jeff Kavanaugh of G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. But they were pointing to a Rick Carlisle quote recently on the ideal running mate for Luka, which goes as follows. He prefers a rugged defender and someone who's able to do something with the ball off the dribble. Now, I don't know about you, but to me, that sounds like the antithesis of what Kristaps Porzingis does. He's certainly not a rugged defender. If anything, he has a poor reputation as somebody who is soft. And when it comes to playing with the ball off the bounce, can you remember the last time KP has done as such? I mean, he really is a one-dimensional player in a lot of ways. Via Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer, in 2 years in Dallas, in situations where he takes more than two dribbles, Porzingis shoots 31.5% from the field. I know that sounds bad, but you're probably wondering, okay, put that into perspective. What does that mean? So of 240 players who qualify for that statistic, Porzingis ranks dead last, number 240, which means he is a liability shooting off the dribble. None of this even mentions his laundry list of injuries. He's had a torn ACL, a sore Achilles, a sore knee, a sprained ankle, a sore groin, strained quad, and a bruised thigh. And that's all on just his left leg. Now, when you go to his right leg, he's had a torn meniscus, a sore knee, sore hip, sprained ankle, sore foot, and knee tendon inflammation. Jordan had Jumpman, Shaq had Dunkman. If KP ever gets a logo, it'll be called Crutchman, because he is always on the sideline with some sort of nagging injury. Already, he was unable to play the entirety of the remainder of his 29th season with the Mavs after he was traded, since he was still recovering from a torn ACL injury. His 2020 postseason was cut short last year with an injury, and heading into the playoffs this year, the Mavs rested him the last stretch of the regular season to have him ready come postseason time. And as we saw, having him in the playoffs barely did anything for the Mavs anyways. The fact that you're paying someone over $30 million a year and have to handle him with kid gloves, essentially, is not a recipe for success. His defense isn't anything special anymore either. The same Kevin O'Connor video for The Ringer pointed to opponents' field goal percentage and the point difference when they're covered by KP within 6 feet of the rim over his last three full seasons. Essentially, his ability to affect a shot near the hoop. Now, back in the 2017-2018 season, he held opponents to 13.7 percentage points under their typical shooting average. Coupled with his 2.7 blocks a night, it's what garnered him the reputation as a fierce rim protector, something the Mavs have sorely lacked since the days of Tyson Chandler. in the 2019-2020 season, his first full year with the Mavs, it dropped to 11.1. Still good, even if there's a small discrepancy. But this year, it fell all the way to 3.3. While he still technically holds opponents to under their typical shooting percentages at the rim, it's not enough as it once was to justify his inability to switch on screens or deal with quicker ball handlers and having such a one-dimensional offensive game. Or the ransom it took to bring him here, or his salary. Really, when you look back to that Kristaps Porzingis trade, the dump-in on that trade, Tim Hardaway Jr., has looked like the real get in that Knicks trade. Now, he played great, and he rose up to be Luka's number two this year. But he's a free agent, and we have to ask ourselves, is he actually a number two on a championship squad? Or was he just that guy for this Mavs team out of necessity, thanks to the void left by Kristaps Porzingis' underwhelming performance? Now, there comes a question of, if not Hardaway, then who? And there are some interesting options in free agency this year. One that comes to mind is, if you were to replace Hardaway, perhaps the Mavs can make a play for DeMar DeRozan. Now, DeRozan is 2 years older than Hardaway. I want to preface this before I say anything else. And Hardaway is by far the better three-point shooter. DeRozan shot 25% from three this year, and he's shot 28 for his entirety of his career, whereas Hardaway shot 39% from three this year. But DeRozan is the far superior playmaker. It hasn't always been that way. He's been forced to fill in that role in San Antonio more so than he was the rest of his career, like when he played alongside a floor general like Kyle Lowry. For the season, DeRozan had 7 assists a night, which would be a huge help to Luka, who's been shouldering a huge load for this offense. While DeRozan is slightly better at defending, neither really plays inspiring defense at this point in their careers. And once again, the question becomes, do you see DeRozan as the man to be Luka's sidekick on a championship run? Think about it. Toronto ran it back year after year with Lowry and DeRozan and were unable to get over that hump in the Eastern Conference. They swapped DeRozan for Kawhi, and suddenly that was a championship team. Do you think DeRozan, now entering his age 33 season, is somehow even better than he was then? I just personally don't think your team is contending for a championship, especially in the brutal Western Conference, if either DeRozan or Tim Hardaway is relied upon as your number two. Now, maybe as your number three, but you have to expect both are trying to cash in big time, as this might be their last big payday for either of their careers. Which brings us to other options then. There's number one on my list, Chris Paul. Now, we all know how great of a player Chris Paul is. His reputation precedes him everywhere he goes. He is one of the most talented point guards we've seen in league history, one of the best leaders. But I think the latter part gets understated a lot because, unlike his counterparts, the LeBron James, the Dwayne Wades of the world, Chris Paul simply doesn't have the hardware to show for it. But don't let that distract you from the fact that Chris Paul has been consistently dominant in his career. As dominant as a small man can be in this league. Just to put into perspective the sort of impact he has on his environments. When he left New Orleans way back in the day, his final season, that team had a 46-36 record. They were 21-45 the following season after his departure. Now you look at the Clippers. Prior to Chris Paul arriving, they were 32-50. His first year there, they were 40-26. And by the time he left Los Angeles, they were a 51-31 team. The year he left, they dropped to 42-40. Now the Rockets, where he left Los Angeles for, they had a good foundation prior to Paul, namely James Harden. That was a team with a 55-27 record already. But in his first year in Houston, they go up to 65-17. And after leaving Houston, They dropped to a 44-win team, and this year they just finished with 17 wins. Then he went for this short stint with the Oklahoma City Thunder, a team that was both losing Paul George and Russell Westbrook. That was supposed to be a rebuild year. But with a bunch of young bloods, Chris Paul still managed to lead that team to a 44-28 record and keep them in playoff contention. After leaving, the Thunder were 22-50 this year. And finally, here comes the Phoenix Suns this year. The Suns couldn't even make the playoffs last year. With a 34-39 record, they seemed to be a team that has nice young pieces, but will never be able to piece it together. Then comes the arrival of Chris Paul, and now they just got done sweeping the MVP Nikola Jokic and the Denver Nuggets, and are awaiting their opponents in the Western Conference Finals. See, that's the thing about Chris Paul. He does a lot of things that don't often get the adulation that they should, right? He's not going to erupt typically for a 30 or 40 point night, not to say that he doesn't have the ability, but he thrives when he makes his teammates better. He makes his environment that much better. He takes reclamation projects and he makes them viable. He takes your already good foundation and makes it great. And that's what we need here in Dallas. You know, we were talking about the playmaking ability of DeMar DeRozan. Apart from Luka, maybe LeBron, it doesn't get better than Chris Paul's playmaking. You want to talk about somebody who can ease the burden for Luka? Look no further than the ideal prototypical point guard in the NBA. You want to talk about somebody who will set an example of what a leader is supposed to look like? Look no further than the man who has turned around every single franchise that he's touched in the entirety of his career. Think about it, the Hornets were a trash can when Chris Paul got there. He made them consistently great, one of the most fun offenses you would have seen in the league during that time. You put him in this offense, there's no telling what he can do. Now, Chris Paul is going to opt out of his contract at year's end, most likely, regardless of what the outcome is in this playoff run. But the reason why is because he still wants another big deal. He wants another three-year deal. And who knows if he is still the same Chris Paul by the third year. But I think that's well worth the risk. If you can somehow clear up cap space, whether it's getting rid of Porzingis somehow, not paying Tim Hardaway, I think Chris Paul is the ideal candidate. I think the impact in the waves would be felt all throughout this organization. I think you would have probably the most lethal backcourt in the NBA. Not probably, you would, bar none. But you gotta believe, especially after this run that he's having, the NBA is starting to appreciate Chris Paul again. I think everybody is starting to reintroduce themselves to perhaps the best point guard of our generation. And so he will have plenty of suitors. There's plenty of people who are going to have the same idea in mind. It's like, what can Chris Paul do for me? And you got to believe his buddy on the banana boat, LeBron James, will be trying to pull as many strings as possible to get Chris Paul to come to the Los Angeles team that he was originally supposed to go to before David Stern stepped in. So maybe we have to cross Chris Paul off the wish list just if we're being real with ourselves. But if we're talking about who the Mavs should go for an all-out pursuit for, I think that's a no-brainer. So then we look at more realistic options there. There's Marcus Smart, who has been known for being a rugged defender. Maybe his reputation is overstated at times because there are nights where he's not necessarily a great defender, but then there are other nights where he looks like the best defender in the NBA. You know, that toughness, that ruggedness that you want from your player, Marcus Smart exhibits that all the time. And his playmaking and his shooting have greatly and vastly improved over the years to the point that you can actually trust Marcus Smart to run your offense. I think he is, in fact, who Rick Carlisle is referring to when he talks about this. At least this is probably the image that he has in his mind when he's talking about a rugged defender who can do things off the bounce. Now, can the Mavs pull that off? Can they pull off a sign and trade? Lord knows that the Celtics are looking for a big man, and maybe they will buy low on Porzingis. I mean, from what I've heard apparently in NBA circles is that Porzingis isn't as valued to the rest of the league. And so right now his stock is probably the lowest it's ever been. Sorry to burst that bubble. But still, Marcus Smart is very much a solid option should the Mavs want to go down that route. And since we're focusing on two guards, there becomes CJ McCollum, who has had great moments for the Portland Trailblazers, has been such a great running mate for Damian Lillard. But then you have to wonder if he is as great as advertised. It's much like the DeMar DeRozan situation. Why could that team never get over the hump? Especially given the fact that Damian Lillard is as good as it gets. Of course, you probably consider Luka over Damian, but it's not that big of a drop off, right? Damian Lillard is solid. And so is McCollum. But for what he's probably going to ask for on the open market, it's going to look a lot similar to DeMar DeRozan in that you probably don't want him to be your number two. Now, I prefer McCollum over Tim Hardaway, mainly because he has the ability to be a playmaker. But that's about it. Then there comes Kyle Lowry. And this is what I would consider Chris Paul light. He has the ability to knock down the jumper. He has great playmaking ability. He is the one to facilitate your offense. And let's put this in perspective. When the Raptors were trying to get Kawhi, they didn't give Kyle Lowry away. That was the untouchable for them. They gave up DeRozan because Kyle Lowry meant more to that team. And Kyle Lowry showed the ability to be able to run an offense while playing alongside a star. Now, Kyle Lowry is going to be 36 pretty soon. His days as a star are probably numbered, if not already over. Now, the season started out and it looked like the Raptors weren't missing a beat, but they fell off, and you have to wonder how much is left in the tank for Kyle Lowry. And with that being the case, you have to wonder if maybe he's willing to take a discount. If you're going to be Chris Paul light on the court, then can I pay you like Chris Paul light? So these are the options the Mavs have, and they should definitely do their due diligence, look under every single rock, see what they can find, what bargain deals they can have. Truth be told, in the end, I think the Mavs' loyalty and inability to bring in a big fish forces them to give a big contract to Tim Hardaway, basically replicating some of the same mistakes in the past of paying good players to be great. And, you know, we've touched on it before, but that's a habitual problem for this Mavs team. The amount of times that they look at a guy and say, we can envision him as a star for this team, when in reality, this guy should not be more than a third option. I'm talking about the Harrison Barnes of the world, the Wesley Matthews, the Chandler Parsons. Even when they went for an all-out pursuit of DeAndre Jordan, they were promising, hey, we can draw up more plays so that you can be more involved in the offense. Clearly, he has a very defined role, and it wasn't that. The Mavs typically just go all out for players that don't deserve it. And not to say that they're bad people or anything, but let's be real. Let's put their ability and put it up against the salary that they're being offered. And many times the Mavs are just constant overpayers on the free market. They can't get their priority free agents. And so they go bargain hunting, except they don't pay like it's a bargain. Which worries me about what the Mavs do with Tim Hardaway. He's going to be 30. And much like Porzingis, he's also very one-dimensional. Like, now, the dimension that he plays with is great. You know, he can go off on nights, but he has tunnel vision when it comes to having the ball in his hand. Once he touches it, he is essentially looking to score. And if he is off, the Mavs are they're toast. And so I grow very weary, especially after what we saw in the playoffs of handing that big contract to Tim Hardaway. Like, I have the feeling the Mavs are just going to meet whatever demands he has. But you already have one player that's massively overpaid. Two players if you count Dwight Powell. But you have one in Porzingis. And, you know, we have to start talking about Doncic and whether or not we'll be able to maintain having him. And obviously the Mavs are willing to pay anything that Doncic requires, essentially the Supermax. But there's already rumblings that perhaps Luka isn't too happy in Dallas. Apparently there is a Mavs front office executive by the last name of, forgive me if I get this wrong, Haralabos, that Luka does not see eye to eye with. Apparently he is the director of quantitative research. He's an analytic guy. And because of that report and some tiff that they had months ago, apparently that rubbed Luka the wrong way and he might not be thrilled to be in Dallas. And that's all you need to hear. Now everybody's jumping on that. Now, Mark Cuban was quick to call that report BS, luckily. But still, you know, when you have this volatile situation, you can't get anything wrong. And by getting anything wrong, I mean paying the wrong guys, which the Mavs have a history of doing. The Mavs have a history of overpaying. They overpaid for Porzingis, in my opinion. A guy who already wanted out of his situation and let it be known, you were still willing to give up two first-round picks for. You overpaid for Rondo, giving up a huge contributor like Jay Crowder at the time, or Brandon Wright. That Mavs team was one of the best in the league at the time. The sum was greater than its parts, and then you gave up on the experiment altogether. You gave up on Tyson Chandler too early, and you did him dirty twice. You gave up on Jason Kidd too early, Jason Terry. But then you overpay for other people's trash. So the Mavs aren't great in free agency. I think it's safe to say that. But what also bothers me is that the Mavs are terrible at the draft. Not only that, but they don't value the draft. Now, the Mavs are the type of team to just say, I want a sure thing. That's oftentimes exemplified by the way Rick Carlisle runs things. It's a reason why a lot of people want Carlisle gone. I don't necessarily want him gone, but this is a toxic trait of his where he will favor the older guys and the more experienced vets over training younger players because he wants instant results and he wants something that he can count on, which I understand. You're playing safe, but because of that, you really limit the upside of your team. It's almost like you're saying, I'm okay being eliminated in the first round every year as long as I can get there. But look at what that practice has gotten them. In late 2014, the Mavs traded three role players in a first-round pick for Rajon Rondo and Dwight Powell. That draft selection wound up being 16th overall in the 2016 draft, and notable players on the board at the time was Malik Beasley, Caris LeVert, Pascal Siakam, and Malcolm Brogdon. Does that not hurt enough? Okay, how about in 2014? When the Mavs had four selections at one point, picks 21, 34, 47, and 51, and they traded them all away in a draft where Nikola Jokic, the MVP, Clint Capella, Spencer Dinwiddie, and Bogdan Bogdanovic were all available when the Mavs would have been on the board. And the story was similar in 2013. This was the infamous year where the Mavs traded the rights to the number 13th pick before settling with the 18th selection, and what turned out to be nothing more than a cost-cutting measure. Giannis Antetokounmpo ended up being sandwiched in between those picks at number 15. Another player that was available at the time was Rudy Gobert, but instead, the Mavs selected, wait for it, Shane Larkin. He plays in Turkey right now. Or you look as recently as the 2019 draft, and there was a player that I was so high on that I wanted the Mavs to quite honestly see if they can trade back into the first round for. And they got lucky. He just kept falling and falling and falling. And somehow He fell in our laps in the second round. That man is Bol Bol, who's turned out to be an incredible high upside project player for an already stacked Nuggets team. And I when you look at the Nuggets, they are just blessed with the way that things fall out for them. Players who shouldn't be there just tend to always fall in their laps. Michael Porter Jr. They got Nikola Jokic in the second round. Bol Bol. Jamal Murray. You know, these are guys that they didn't have to pick in the top five to get. They just got blessed to have, and I guess you can say blessed, or they're just really good at their jobs because they find these guys not necessarily in the money spots. They are just good at drafting, but the Mavs had a shot to take Bol Bol, and I just thought of the possibilities of having Bol Bol on this team. Basically everything that you like about Porzingis, but much younger, not nearly as injury riddled, and much cheaper. And instead, the Mavs kept trading back and trading back and trading back until Bol Bol was taken right in front of them. And the Mavs selected Isaiah Roby, who's not even on the team anymore. That's my problem with the Mavs' approach, is that they are only focused on the here and now and refuse to focus on the future. And if you are going to build around Luka, at least be good at building in the here and now. But you can't even do that. Look at the free agent acquisitions they brought in. Nobody's. Josh Richardson for Seth Curry, it turned out to hurt the Mavs more than it helped them. Because come playoff time, they didn't have the three-point shooting that they needed. And Josh Richardson was just simply on the bench. JJ Redick was supposed to be this big acquisition. Could he even play? The Mavs ran with an eight-man rotation. What are the Mavs really doing in free agency? What are they doing in the draft? How are you building around Luka? Or is this all just a game to you? And that's my problem with this Mavs team, is just the fact that this is just repeated behavior. And I feel as if we just appease it by just hoping that things work out. We were some of the luckiest of fans to have Dirk Nowitzki. And then right after that era, we have Luka fall in our laps. And players that just keep us afloat. But in reality, this team isn't that good. It's just the top end of it. It's just so great. And we're so top heavy that we will never see the cracks in the armor. And Luka has just been keeping this team afloat. Because think about it. Even with Luka dropping over 40 points and 14 assists in game 7. And yet this team still finds a way to lose. What does that say about the way this team is constructed? And what does that say about you as a front office? But what I will say about you listeners is that you're nothing short of incredible, and your support means the world to me. During this 12-episode run, the amount of love and support I've gotten has been nothing short of astonishing. And this show wouldn't be anything without y'all. I don't know if there's going to be a season 2 or what it will look like, but all I can say is that this 12-episode run has been incredible, and it's been humbling to be able to cover my favorite team. Whether or not you believe in the Mavs, I thank you for believing in me. Take care, and God bless.